Bonneville International Corporation, or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency might be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we have Ken Fisher in the studio, and he's the director of Gov2O Labs. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Good.
Thought we'd take a few moments and take a look at this whole concept of Gov2O, find out a little bit more about it from your perspective, and maybe give our listeners some guidelines on how to learn more about it and how it affects their careers in the federal government. But first of all, kind of an interesting background, let's find out a little bit more about you and how'd you ever wind up living in the Washington, D.C. area and focusing in on Gov2O?
Well, my wife was in the D.C. area. I was actually just up the road in Maryland, and she really liked Northern Virginia, so we ended up moving down here. So I grew up in Maryland.
So a local fella?
More or less, yep.
So you start off your career in the medical area, I guess, and then wound up in computers, is that right?
Right. I was very interested in problem solving around human behavior in the brain. And so I started my career in neuroscience. And then with the start of the internet becoming very interesting, I moved to that. And I'm still very interested in how people interact with technology and how people solve problems.
Well, there's plenty of problems to solve in the federal government. There's no lack of problems there. All kind of problems. And from the perspective of my listeners, their hands are tied. They have to be transparent. They have to be secure. They have to come within budget. They have to be creative. They got to motivate people to accomplish all these myriad tasks. And we're going to talk about a little about motivation here as well. Let's try to define this term Gov2O. I never remember Gov1O. What is Gov2O from your perspective?
Well, it has its roots in the whole Web2O movement. I think it's confusing because you listen to one speaker and they say it's all about transparency. Another speaker will say it's all about new technologies, collaborative technologies. Other people will focus on new types of communication, social media, interactive communication, crowdsourcing. I think in general, it is the area where IT, communications, and lines of business overlap. And the new ways of communicating, new ways of thinking about how to solve problems and advances in technology make this a very fast-growing area with lots of promise to bring about better government in a number of areas.
For more information, you can go to Ken's website. It's gov2olabs.org. And you can read a lot of things about how he defines Gov2O, some outcomes and capabilities. And one capability people like to have is his understanding this. And you've been involved in putting together events in the area here that help my listeners just get a grasp on what this Gov2O is all about. Is that right?
Yes. In the last 2 years, I've put together about a little over 20 events, mostly in collaboration with Potomac Forum, around different topics of Gov2O. One event, we actually got about 6 hours of C-SPAN coverage as well. Where Admiral Thad Allen keynoted it. Then Admiral Thad Allen keynoted it.
Yeah, we like the folks at C-SPAN. They're just up the road. That was the Open Government Better Practices Conference. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So open government does not necessarily mean open source software. I guess that's one term we got to get defined here. There's new media and Web2O and e-commerce and online social networks. Give us some guidelines maybe on how one of my listeners can take a look at something like a wiki and decide whether or not it should be part of their enterprise architecture or whether it should be or what kind of value it would have. I mean, how would you evaluate just a topic like a wiki?
I would not evaluate it from a technology point of view. I would first go to what's the mission that you're trying to accomplish and trace that back to how you're accomplishing it. And then look at areas where you have a culture where people are willing to collaborate or can be taught the advantages of collaboration, and then train them to how to create documents collaboratively. So if you have an area where you need to pull in information from a number of people, and those people are part of a culture in which they are happy to contribute to a crowdsourced document, then a wiki would be something to consider. I think there's a tendency to see these technology tools independent from the culture and the communications aspect. And that's where thinking of Gov2O as the overlap between communications, IT, and lines of business become very useful. I think you don't have success when you just consider any one of those.
I heard Charlene Lee speak last week, and she's a pretty well-known speaker in the area here, and she talks about social networking and the whole idea of social media. And I think she's trying to dazzle the audience with some fun facts that she has there. I don't know if that has any application for the federal government or not. But I think from a practical perspective, that's what people try to look at is how can we use a social networking tool like Wikipedia and incorporate it into an organization like the intelligence community. We just had the folks on from Intellipedia and talked about that social networking. And that's all part and parcel of Gov2O. What other components of Gov2.0 do you see?
Well, I'd like to start with the outcomes that you want and then trace it back to capabilities. And so some of the capabilities, collaborative workspace, we touch upon that. Another is crowdsourcing. There's now a push for contests and prizes in the federal government to solve problems. That's had some very early big successes through DARPA with the Grand Challenge, where they've been able to create an autonomously driven vehicle with very small budget. I think it was $20 million in 2006. Now that vehicle is down at the Smithsonian. Other areas are faster and better decision-making, and that's where internal social media and crowdsourcing tools can play a role. In the communications area, you have this tension, of course, between information sharing and secure information sharing, and that, of course, is going to have to be resolved on a mission-by-mission, case-by-case basis, I think, almost. So understanding designing either websites or any kind of interaction with the public or with a large audience from the audience's perspective rather than simply the service's perspective is another important component. So audience-centered design is a very important component, because if people can't use it or don't use it, then it really is not serving its purpose.
So if your agency or your bureau is being encouraged to communicate more with citizens, probably what you would recommend they do is they take a look at that audience and do some analytics and try to find out what the audience is all about, how they like to get their information, before you start designing this grandiose system to provide information that no one may be interested in, huh?
Exactly. There's a real tendency to pick tools when it comes to audience communications. I need a Twitter account. I need a Facebook page. I need a social network. And those can be very useful and effective tools if they're part of a strategy, which first starts with who those target audiences are, what their needs are, and how you're going to reach them.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Ken Fisher, who's the director of Gov2O Labs, talking about what Gov2O is all about, how it's defined, and how to encourage listeners like you and to move to the brave new world of new technologies. I guess one way to motivate people is to offer prizes and challenges, and that's worked very successfully with some areas of the federal government, hasn't it?
Yes. As I mentioned before, DARPA, NASA's done a great job of challenges and prizes with its Centennial Challenge and several other prize programs they've launched. USDA has now launched several challenges along with NIH, particularly NCI. And, of course, there was the Apps for Democracy contest under Vivek Kundra, which Peter Corbett organized before about three, four years ago. That got a lot of interest because it was able to create software that was highly usable. People want it and found useful with a very low budget. Challenges is part of the crowdsourcing movement, and it has this interesting blend of adding competition and collaboration. The competitive level, of course, is that you're offering a prize and people compete for that prize. And the collaborative level is it highly incentivizes people to reach out using social media or other ways of finding experts in new fields to then form teams and work together to come up with new ideas and new technologies.
One of the terms, the buzzwords that surrounds Gov2O is the term crowdsourcing. Well, give me a quick definition of the why I think of crowdsourcing is sometimes you go to websites and they have you type in funny-shaped words. And what happens is they can collect that information and try to find out what's legible and what's not legible. I guess that's one aspect of crowdsourcing. But there's all kinds of different ways to define it. How does this apply to the world of Gov2O? How does crowdsourcing apply in this world?
Well, let me also just real quick plug the video of an event we did on November 10th of Robin Storm, who's the advisor to the deputy CTO at the White House. And she goes through a history of contests and examples of how they're being used around the world in both commercial and government contexts.
I'd just like to jump in here. You can go to gov2olabs.org and find that video. Mm-hmm. And it's right there, very easy to see. And the spelling on her name is unusual. It's R-O-B-Y-N-N-K-S-T-U-R-N. If you're going to go to Google or if you're going to go to a popular site called YouTube and try to find mm-hmm. her, that might be a connection to find it if you want to spell out her name. S-T-U-R-N. For your search folks out there. So I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No problem. Getting back to what crowdsourcing is, it's either distributed production or collecting distributed knowledge among a crowd. And so the history of it dates back to scientifically to the 1800s. And so there's a book out by James Look for Wisdom of the Crowds, which talks about that history. There are examples of it, even with submarines in the 1950s, I believe. So it's not a new thing, but the Web 2.0 technologies where you can get information collaboration across a unconnected crowd, previously unconnected crowd, is enabling more and more crowdsourcing to be done more easily. The example you talked about, John, of people typing in different things, and then the computer learning how people are interpreting images is a good one of collecting distributed knowledge. Google does this. Google pays attention to what you click on after you do a search.
Interesting.
And that's a component of their search rankings.
Now, if you study history, the French Revolution had a lot of crowdsourcing going on. It was kind of the wrong crowd. And I have three kids. I don't like to see my kids hanging out with the wrong crowd. So this can be positive and negative. It has to be structured and focused, doesn't it?
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. A lot of people view crowdsourcing as just you just throw something out to the crowd.
That's dangerous.
And that is not crowdsourcing. Crowdsourcing is a structured approach to collecting knowledge from the crowd or distributing production. So and there's IT forms of this as well. For instance, a lot of people are familiar with the search for the SETI project, where years ago people were having screensavers, which would process information to search for intelligent life from data from radio telescopes. But that's a computer form of it. The human analog, there's a project in Britain now where they're collecting weather information from ship logs. The British Navy has for many years, decades if not centuries, taken very accurate weather measurements every, I think, half hour, 1 hour, even in the middle of battles, they'll stop and take that weather measurement. And so now there's a project where people are reading those logs because they can't be read by computer, finding the weather data, and then getting a climate record that was previously unavailable.
So you mean to tell me Horatio Nelson, in the middle of the battle at Trafalgar, he said, stop, let's see what the temperature is, and we'll move on from there?
No, of course he didn't. But his guys
down
in
below
the ship,
did that.
They did.
They were doing that. Well,
there are logs
there, huh?
Where they'll taking enemy fire, ship two hits on the starboard bow, and weather is,
it'll really do that,
wind
huh?
is.
Wow, that's amazing.
The British are.
So crowdsourcing isn't...
Navy.
crowdsourcing isn't something that just sprung out of Horatio Nelson's brow. It's been around for a while. It's just being repackaged.
Well,
with,
he didn't use it, but now we're using it to interpret his data. But there was a famous example of getting a weight of, I think, a pig at the at a World's Fair. So it may have been just a local country fair, but there was a scientist who then took all the slips of paper people were guessing, and he found that consistently the crowd had the closest answer.
The average, yeah.
That's in a situation, a structured situation where people are motivated, mm-hmm. and most of those people have some knowledge of what pigs actually weigh. Some people think you can go to a crowd that has no knowledge of the topic and get answers. That doesn't actually work. You need some knowledge, and the best way is to get knowledge of different perspectives or different types of knowledge and find a way to blend and collect and aggregate that.
Yeah, the aggregation is different, especially in a situation where it has to be secure. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Ken Fisher, who's the director of Gov2O Labs. You can get more information at gov2olabs.org, and you might want to troll around there and find a video from Robin Stern, and she talks about using challenges and prizes to promote open government. You mentioned a couple topics earlier. One was mashups. How do you define a mashup?
And just a quick correction, John. She's actually talking about using challenges and prizes to accomplish mission.
Okay.
The White House is actually interested in how this can help create new technologies, have a more innovative America, solve problems such as creating a better cybersecurity workforce.
More communication with citizens, the larger goals.
Right. And technology solutions as well as innovative solutions on how to create things. So,
got it.
We're talking about more...
A mashup.
Oh, mashup. Mashups are fun. Mashups are part of a new style of programming that basically came out of SOA, Software as a Service. And it's a way to quickly create a solution. For instance, it may be data that you need to collect from multiple sources and have an ongoing small piece of code which aggregates data that you wouldn't have otherwise, and you'd otherwise have to go out through an IT procurement to get. So if you have APIs and you have data standards in your IT infrastructure, you have the potential to quickly create solutions to problems that you encounter, increasing your agency responsiveness to solutions. So BP Gulf oil spill happens, you need different data in different ways very quickly. So that's it. That's one potential example.
Another topic you kind of touched on there was the semantic web. This is probably a 500-hour answer to the semantic mm-hmm. web. And so give us just a thumbnail sketch of what this whole concept's all about, semantic.
Well, right now, if you go to Google, you put in keywords, and Google looks for the words that match those keywords mostly. It does have some synonyms, but it mainly is looking for keyword matching. The idea of the semantic web and linked data is to actually have a web of meaning rather than simply links between words or ASCII. And so we want the web to better understand meaning as humans understand it. And so one way of doing that is linking data using, and there's some technical jargon here, RDF, Sparkle, and such, using a certain methodology, which Tim Berners-Lee advocates, which is now being called linked data. And that basically puts meaning in the links. A real quick sketch is, instead of just a link, an HTML link from one to another, you actually have a meaning of that link. And that's how people operate. When you think of the association between your office space and your car, there's a meaning associated with that. The time to walk to work, the time to get out of work, the convenience of the parking, the cost of the parking, and so forth. So it's linked data is basically very simple method, taking both data standards and linking data in ways which the link itself has meaning.
That's an interesting concept. I guess it applies with a lot of Gov2O strategies where social networking is trying to combine with other types of technologies. Is that where it would be applied, or where would that be applied typically?
Well, Intel has applied it to understand human networks, understand banks are now applying it to better understand their data. For instance, if when you do this, you make data more queryable for more things. And so another aspect of the underlying technology is a lot of times when you have standard databases, traditional databases, you basically are designing those databases based on how you're going to query that data. If you have better meaning in your data store, you can then query the data for more things greater than you originally planned. And in the modern world, those new ways you need to query data happen almost every week. So I think it's definitely the way things need to go. There is a hurdle to overcome in how do we start incorporating data standards, which data standards do we incorporate, as well as how can we get a solution quickly. Some of the linked data approaches take a lot of time and effort to implement. So I think there needs to be more thought about how to blend analytics with data standards and some of the linked data approaches to better be able to stand up solutions more quickly. But definitely enterprise architecture seems to be moving in that direction. And basically they want to, the EA community wants to link the enterprise architecture down through the data in a meaningful way so that you can at the architectural level start drilling down to data in a more executable way and then making modifications which have meaning to the data.
Great. Tim Berners-Lee, geez, I remember back before he was famous, so that's how long I've seen this technology. What did he ever come up with? The web? No, that's not important. So if he's getting behind this, there must be some impetus, must be some value to it in the long term. We've just completed an interview with Ken Fisher. We talked about Gov2O, topics like crowdsourcing and using a wide range of technologies to achieve the goals of the administration. You have been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Ken Fisher, director of Gov2O Labs, for coming in the studio. Thanks, Ken.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider.
Tom Trabucco, Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
Somebody noticed a change in their account balance that didn't reflect contributions or earnings. So what we did is activated our core at the call centers to give them information for any of these folks to tell them of our plan to get this right. We'll notify all affected participants, offer to take the funds back, reverse the transaction, and make them whole.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Dorabeck Insider.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
Our special guest today, once again, is Dr. George Komasolis, Deputy Director for the Center for Biomedical Informatics and Information Technology and Acting Chief Information Officer at the National Cancer Institute. Dr. Komosolos joins us once again on this week's show to continue our discussion of his priorities and challenges in making sure the National Cancer Institute has the technology it needs to be successful.
One of the priorities you mentioned was obviously voice over IP and the piloting of that. You have on your desk a very interesting contraption. Give us a little description of what it is, how it works. Obviously, this may not be something that everyone gets, but at least this is part of the pilot. It seems to be, you know, one of those Star Trek where you could see the person you're talking to, so if you're in your underwear, everyone sees that.
We're piloting right now the voice over